Hello. This is kind of a weird thing, but after a big success with bringing Avatar: The Last Airbender to Netflix and then everyone on Earth talking about it, partially because it's a great show, partially because quarantine leaves people with nothing else to do, they decided to do the same thing for Korra, which makes sense. And now on my timeline on Twitter, I'm seeing people say, like, some people are like, "Oh boy, Legend of Korra." And some people specifically are like, Legend of Korra gets a lot of hate, and I don't think it deserves it. It's a good show, and that's wrong. And some people who are the ones I most want to slap, I see people be like, "Hey, I've just watched Avatar for the first time in 2020, and it was great. Is Legend of Korra just as good?" And sometimes I will see people say something like, "Yeah, people hate on it a lot, but like it's just as good as Avatar." And frankly, how fucking dare you tell a person who is on the high of just having finished for the first time ever Avatar: The Last Airbender, and you look them dead in the eye and lie to them and say, "Yeah, man, Korra's just like more Avatar and it's just as good." Frankly, fuck off. Like, if you like Korra, fine. But if you're like, "Oh, it's just as good as Avatar," you are a dirty goddamn liar. Pretty much entirely out of spite, and because I don't want to make a video about it or anything, I want to do what is essentially an open thoughts on Legend of Korra, which is like the thing I usually do when I'm going to write a "So This Is Basically." I have like half of a "So This Is Basically" Korra written. It's been written for years. The reason I didn't do it, I think actually it might have won, or it kept coming in second, like 5 months in a row back when I used to do the poll. It kept coming in second. And this is basically just me using this as an avenue to yell about it. So what I want to do here is talk about why Legend of Korra doesn't work. I'm also, and I'll mention this in the description, I'll have a link. I think it'll be fun to make this free, and then so anyone can listen to it, so I can go, "Here is why Korra is bad. Do not ask me to make a video. Do not tweet me about it." And then just for Patreon people exclusively, I will record some of the lines I have for the actual video and kind of gussy them up a little bit as a Patreon exclusive, and that'll be in the link below. So, Legend of Korra. If you like it, fine, whatever. Like, you're allowed to like whatever. If you say it's a good show, you're wrong, and I'm allowed to attack that thought because it's incorrect. It's a shitty show. It's a bad production. Here is why. So, for people who don't know, somehow, Avatar: The Last Airbender is one of not only the best animated shows ever. It's actually just one of the best shows ever. It's like inexplicably, I think it's in like the top 15 shows of all time on IMDb's ranking chart. It's very good. Avatar is the story of a war-torn world where there are four nations. Each of them are based around the classical elements, so earth, wind, fire, and water. And 100 years ago, before the show started, the Fire Nation basically declared war on everyone else, and there has been a 100-year war where they are slowly conquering everything. And there is a very powerful person who can control all four elements, and people in these nations are called benders, and they can like airbend, waterbend, you get the idea. There is one person who reincarnates essentially as different people with the same powers who can master all four elements. They are called the Avatar, and when the Avatar dies, it goes to the next person in the cycle. So the Fire Avatar dies, and that means it goes to the Air Nation. And because of that, the Fire Nation, knowing that they would be stopped by the Avatar, basically wiped out all the Air Nomads so that there couldn't be an Avatar going to them. But instead of dying, Aang gets frozen in a block of ice for 100 years and then goes on a journey to stop the Fire Nation. And it's a great show with good characters and themes, great voice acting. It's just people even now are just like, "This show is fucking great." And it is. It holds up. It's awesome. There's only like two bad episodes. It's just so good. And that was, I think that ran from like 2003 to 2006, maybe something around that time. And then in 20, I want to say 11 or 10,
they announced a sequel show, The Legend of Korra, which takes place about 70 years after Avatar. Aang has died. He and Fire Lord Zuko, who is one of his party members and a good guy, basically end the war together, and they decide, hey, we need all the nations to come together. Let's make a new republic where all the nations are together and buddies. We'll call it Republic City. And Republic City is essentially a New York. It's kind of in the center of the world, and it is supposed to be a neutral area that promotes peace between the nations. This is 70 years later, so that it's basically set, whereas Avatar was kind of like sort of kung fu-ish and very low tech. They've kind of jumped to at the edge of an industrial revolution. Firebenders are using lightning, which they can bend lightning if they're good at it. Don't ask questions. There's more airships, cars exist now, a lot's going on. So essentially, you have all this hype of a new Avatar show with a female Avatar named Korra, who's a little older. It's probably going to be a more mature show. It's set in this cool, not quite steampunk, like diesel punk almost, 1930s gangster aesthetic city. And it's in the same universe by most of the same team. And that sounds so fucking cool. So people are hyped as fuck for this show. And it's only going to have one season at first. And the conflict is that Korra is a new Avatar, and Korra's the worst. She's an awful character. I hate her so much. She is a different character every single season. She is written badly in like 3.5 out of 4 of them. Especially season 2. I'll get to that. So, the first season of Legend of Korra is about Korra, who has already mastered 3 out of the 4 elements. She's having trouble with air, so she goes to train with Aang's son, Tenzin, who is one of the last airbenders. Because they, you know, you can't repopulate a species in a culture in a day. You gotta make a lot of babies. So, Tenzin and some of his kids are the only earthbenders, or airbenders. So Korra goes there to learn. And meanwhile, in this city, there is this bender versus non-bender conflict going on where, benders who can move an element are inherently more powerful. They have access to more jobs. They are more convenient. It is pretty much inarguably better to be a bender than it is to be a non-bender. And that's a cool conflict because it's definitely one that would show up in this setting, especially after like all the nations are equal. It doesn't matter what kind of bender you are, but then non-benders are like, well, it sucks to be a non-bender. And there is this militant group rising up. God, do they have a name? I actually don't remember. Let me look it up real quick. Amon, Korra, are you in charge of somebody? Okay, come on. The Equalists, that's what they're called. So this purported non-bender named Amon is the leader of this group called the Equalists, who are a violent group protesting all of the pro-bender stuff. They want equality, and they are using like violent gang tactics to get it. It's an interesting conflict because like they have a point, but they're violent, so who do you side with? And Korra is so bad at defusing situations because they decided to like raise her in like a monastery at the North Pole instead of like with other people. So she like comes to the city and doesn't even know what money is, which is like so beyond stupid. I literally can't believe they wrote that into the show. But anyway, the main plot of season one, there's so much wrong with Korra. Like, I tried to start this off with, like, here's what's cool. The setting is really cool. The idea for the conflict is cool. Also, Amon, the scary masked leader of the Equalists, who is voiced by Steve Bloom, very cool villain idea. And they ruin him. So the Equalists go around and they use the new technology where you have, like, taser gloves and kung fu shit, and they are beating up benders. And they're bridging the skill gap because of the new technology. Again, great way to use the setting and dovetail it right into the conflict. The problem is, all of that sounds great. The problem is, 90% of Korra's season, the first season, which originally was the only season, so they knew this was the complete story going into it, they focus on Korra in this awkward love triangle between the brothers Bolin and Mako, neither of whom are good characters. And they are pro-benders. And pro-bending is like a sport where people just throw discs of bending at each other to knock them onto a platform. It's exceptionally boring and is never fun to watch, even one time. So they decide, of course, to focus on that for, I'm going to say collectively, like two or three episodes. And Korra's like, I want to go bending. And she's just like a rebellious teen. And Tenzin's like, no, you have to learn this boring shit you hate. And the reason it's hard for you is because it's boring to you. And you have to learn to go with the flow. And she's like, no, I'm going to be the worst for four seasons, especially in season two. So she falls in love with Mako, who has no personality, like just straight up is not a person. And Mako's in love with Asami, who is the rich, sexy heiress to the Sodomobile Empire, which are like the people who invented cars. So she's essentially Henry Ford's daughter. And Asami has potential. She's like the only good party member of the entire show. And the show just adamantly refuses to use her. It's very frustrating. Because she's like a cool kung fu taser fist lady who is hot and is a mechanist. She's like, she's got, oh, and she's bi. She's got like all the makings of the best character. And then they're just like, yeah, you get no screen time. Fuck you. So, instead of focusing on this like cool political intrigue where, oh, one of the council members in charge of the city is like maybe doing some shady shit and Korra has to fight him. Like, oh, the equalists are using the gangs. Like, oh, these groups are fighting each other in the shadows of the city and it's threatening to fuck up Republic City. Instead of focusing on that, they focus on all this teen angst drama that is totally not interesting and totally stupid. And then the worst thing is, by the time that's all kind of out of the way and the new Team Avatar comes together, Bolin, Mako, Korra, Asami, they're like, all right, we are going to put aside our differences and work together to fight Amon and the Equalists. And they do. They fight this councilman who's his name's Tarlok, and he's like, I'm secretly a bloodbender, which is illegal, and waterbenders, if they're really strong, can bend people's blood. It's very dangerous. He captures Korra. I don't remember why. It's been a while since I watched season one. Sif and I watched the first three seasons of the show a couple years ago because it looked like we were going to be doing this video, but it didn't happen. And the Tarlok stuff is pretty cool, too. Like, he's very scary. He's a bloodbender. He kicks Korra's ass. Korra sucks so much. She's just so bad, and she's so annoying. And, like, she's supposed to be, like, a fiery action girl, but, like, she's not even good at being an action girl, and she's just useless in social situations. Like, it's almost literally unbelievable the White Lotus did this bad a job training the new Avatar. I can't believe she doesn't know what money is when she comes to Republic City. It drives me fucking wild. Like, her dad is the leader of the North Pole. Like, she has to know what an economy is. It's just frustrating. And the big twist in season one, I didn't mention it yet, but Amon's big thing is he has the power to take people's bending away, which is a rare thing that, like, no one knows how to do, except Aang did it once in the first show. That's how he beat the final boss without killing him. And they're like, oh my god, why is Amon able to do this? And he even beats Korra up at one point. Is like, I'm not going to take your bending away, because if I do, you'll become a martyr. So fuck off for now. And the big twist is that Amon is Tarlok's brother. And Tarlok is the evil councilman, and he's like, my dad was an evil bloodbending gangster who once ruled this town from the shadows. And then he got exiled to the South Pole and married my mom, who was a waterbender, and secretly trained my brother and I in the ways of bloodbending under the full moon. And then, it turns out that Amon is secretly Noatok, Tarlok's brother, and he's a bloodbender, and he uses bloodbending to get rid of people's bending, which doesn't really make sense, but I'll allow it. And then he's like, that's right, I don't really care about the bender, non-bender revolution thing, I just want to take over the city from the shadows. And it's just like, no, why, what, no, and then Korra, like, kind of beats him by learning airbending, which is, like, a fine season-long arc. And he's just like, I'm out of here. And he skedaddles with his brother. And they're like, we're gonna leave on a boat. And then Tarlok, who is maybe arguably the best character of this season, he's sincerely not a bad villain. I like him. I think they fuck up Amon pretty bad. He blows up the boat and kills them both to end their bloodbending legacy. And that's just the end. And here's the problem with that. That's a good arc for Tarlok, who's like, God, we hated our abusive evil dad so much and we've become just like him. I want to end our legacy. That's fine. A+. I like Tarlok. Good bad guy. The reason Amon doesn't work is because the revolution Amon is leading with benders versus non-benders is actually a really cool idea and one that super would come up in the setting. And like once it comes up, you're like, hey, yeah, it would suck to be a non-bender. And it does suck to be a non-bender. So like, how do we work towards equality and equity between these two groups? And then Amon is revealed to be a bloodbender, and everyone's like, oh, our leader of non-benders was a bender? Oh no! And then he leaves and gets killed off screen. Not that anyone knows that, come to think of it. And then they just act like the bender, non-bender conflict is resolved? Like, as though the social issue stemmed from Amon riling the people up? And it's like, no. Like, even if he was evil and had selfish intentions, which he shouldn't have been. They should have just made Tarlok the main antagonist. Amon's point, even if what he was doing for the wrong reasons, the movement he was a part of had legitimate concerns that really, really, really are important in this setting. And they just act like they don't matter. And the show drops it. They never bring it up again. Like, it's just like it's over. And there's three more seasons. And like, okay. So Legend of Korra was famously dicked over by Nickelodeon. They didn't have enough time to make their seasons. They got moved to digital release exclusively. And back in like 2011, 2012, not every major network had a functioning online thing. So like legitimately, I tried to watch it legally off of Nickelodeon's website when it was releasing, and it didn't work. So that was essentially a death sentence. It was like the digital equivalent of moving a show from like a 7 p.m. primetime slot to like a 4 a.m. on a Saturday slot. And then even in the fourth season, they flat out just had to like cut an episode and essentially abridge an episode they had kind of made to finish it up in time. And all that stuff, that all sucks. And I understand that that sucks, but that doesn't make a lot of their writing decisions okay. And it gets worse and worse as the show goes on. I'm hardest on season one because they had to have had a plan going into at least season one by itself. Like, I know seasons 2, 3, and 4 were nothing but surprises, but if you're pitching this show to Nickelodeon, you should have a plot for 13 episodes of your show. Is it even 13 episodes? I think it must be. But yeah, and that's a bad ending. It's boring. And then, you know, Mako and Korra kiss, and Mako and Korra could not have less chemistry. I haven't really gone into it, but here, let me finish this thing with Amon. But yeah, that's a big issue. And it's just dropped like it never mattered. And that to me is a huge problem in the show's long running thing. Like, as the show goes on, that becomes a problem. It's not really a problem in season one by itself because it's at the end of the show, so they thought it was going to be over, so they were just like, yeah, whatever, off screen we'll resolve benders and non-benders. But then they have three more seasons and they never talk about it again. Anyway, pisses me off very much, that does. Yeah, but Amon is a total waste. So the core team Avatar has big issues. First of all, Korra is just so dumb. She is dumb to the point of being an unlikable protagonist, especially in season 2, where throughout the show, she makes, like, at first she makes decisions that are like, oh, you're a fiery-spirited girl who doesn't really understand social situations and prefers to talk with your fists. I kind of get that. And it's an interesting conflict because one of the big conflicts Aang had to deal with in Avatar is that he is raised by peaceful people. He is a very non-confrontational person. He is the incarnation of an airbender. You keep it loose and nice and you avoid conflict. And his big thing at the end is he has to fight this evil warlord Fire Hitler. And how does he beat him without killing him? Because he cannot bring himself to kill a person. He never does it. And he finds a way to do that, and it's an interesting conflict. And at a glance on paper, it's kind of neat that Cora is the opposite, where she loves fighting and is willing to throw hands with anybody, but all of her conflicts are political and require diplomacy, and she is just so bad at that. But here's the thing. It is interesting to watch people go on traveling journeys with Aang and his gang, where the solution is we need to go around the world and find ways to beat people without using violence, and it's all about learning and figuring out clever ways to use our bending. It is not fun to watch Korra, who is the Avatar, go, ah, here is our Avatar. Help us solve problems, Avatar. And she is just an idiot. She is the wrongest person to be in any of these situations and makes everything worse the minute she puts her, like, she walks into it. Like, I understand that's a character conflict. It's just not fun to watch as an audience member. It's frustrating. It's like watching an incompetent person get elected to office and then watching them bungle shit. And I think there's something interesting that can be done with that. Korra didn't do it. It's just frustrating. So Mako and Bolin. Mako is just nothing in the first season. He's like literally just like kind of a standoffish boy. And that's it. To the point, legitimately, as the show goes on, they make fun of how, like, they turn him not having a personality into his personality, and then it kind of works, actually. I actually think he's the funniest of the main characters by the end, which is, like, a very low bar and not a good sign, but I do think that. So, like, in the fourth season, there's this bit where Korra's been quarantined up in the North Pole while she's doing physical therapy to recover from some damage at the end of the third season, and all her friends are writing her letters, and Mako's letter is just like, hello, Korra. I hope you're feeling well. How's the weather up there? But enough jokes. Like, it's... And that's kind of funny, because it makes his lack of a flavor sort of a flavor. But in the first season, God, he's just nothing. He's just so boring. And then Bolin is just the worst. Bolin... They were, like, trying to recreate Sokka, because in Avatar, Sokka is this kind of, like, he's, like, the smart guy. He's a non-bender. He needs to use his brains. So he's a strategist. He's a warrior. And he's very versatile, and he's clever. And he's also fucking hysterical. And they clearly wanted to remake Bolin, remake Sokka. So they were like, all right, Bolin will be the funny one. But instead, he comes across more like a character written to be the funny one in, like, a bad DreamWorks movie. Like Donkey in Shrek. Like, that kind of archetype where he's just like, I say silly things sometimes and I don't really get it. And it just, every joke is so flat. And I, like, not knocking the actor, because most of the vocal performances are good, but I almost get the impression that, like, Bolin kind of reminds me of, like, Rebel Wilson, who is, like, kind of famous as a comedic actress, where they think of her as, like, oh, she's very funny, and she adds, like, silly improv, and we put the improv in the final cut. And, like, maybe it was funny in the moment on set, but, like, watching it as next to written dialogue, it's like, oh, this is not that funny. Like, it's, like, C-minus improv, but we're taking the time to look at it. And Bolin's lines feel very meandering and very, like, they always go on a beat too long for it to be a joke. So it almost feels like the voice actor was kind of, like, not ad-libbing, but, like, would take the confusion and kind of stretch it one or two or even three beats too long. And, like, I don't know whose fault that is. I'm sure it's more the writers. Maybe it's even the director. But, like, God, it just doesn't work. And Bolin is never good. He's never good the entire show's run. Then Asami is cool. She's even pretty cool with the fact that I think there's, like, some stupid shit where, like, Mako, like, kisses both. Like, Korra kisses Mako while Asami is dating. Like, it's all dumb. And, like, Asami is just consistently cool with getting dicked over. She's cool with getting cucked for a little while. She's a good friend. She's smart. She's effective. But she is not in the show. She's just not in the show. just not at all. And it's very frustrating because I think she's the character that had the most potential. So anyway, there's that. And that's sort of the issue with season one. There's also Tenzin and then the Toph's granddaughter who, like, okay, here's how I'm going to start talking about season two. Korra also does this thing where, and all of the shows done by the Korra team or the Avatar team, because there's a couple, like, Voltron has shades of the Korra team, Dragon Egg, what is it called? Not Dragon Tales, The Dragon Prince is partially made by the same team, and you can see the same things in a lot of their writing. It's always a different mix and match of who is in charge, but I think whatever... People keep giving those teams a shot, and I haven't seen the second season of Dragon Prince. I wasn't impressed by the first season, and it's probably the best of... out of, like, Voltron, Korra, and Dragon Prince, I think Dragon Prince has the most potential to be good, but, man, people keep giving these guys a shot, and I don't think they deserve it. And it's so clear they are trying to capture this lightning in a bottle that was Avatar The Last Airbender again. And they just can't do it. And they don't know what made it good. And, like, they'll do things like, okay, people liked Appa and Momo, the animal companions from Avatar. So let's give Korra this big polar bear dog named Naga. And, like, Naga never does jack shit and, like, isn't endearing at all. To the point I think both the audience and the writers forget she exists multiple times and they just stop bringing her up in most seasons. Because... she was never that in... Oh, yeah, literally, it's Appa and Momo again. I forgot Bolin has, like, a fire fox squirrel panda thing that's, like, a little ferret. And that's fine. But, like, you know, it feels very much like, well, Avatar did this, so we need to do this, and it does not work. So, that being in mind, and those are very light examples of copying Avatar and doing it again. Season 2... of Korra is the worst season in the whole show by a landslide. It is remarkably bad. So the overall plot is that it's about spirits, which is cool. So it's like about spirit bending and which has been touched on a little before, and getting in touch with the spirit world, which Korra is also bad at. So Korra's dad, like I mentioned, is the like leader of the North Pole tribe, which is the smaller of the two water tribes. And then her uncle, who I'm going to call Claude Frollo, his name's Unalaq, I'm going to call him Claude Frollo. He is cartoonishly evil, just so evil. You think that lightning would strike every time he talks. He's so evil, it's insane. And he walks up and is just like, Korra, I can teach you how to bend the spirits. You'd simply have to destroy your father. Like, it's not to that degree, but, like, it is almost to that degree. And Korra, throughout this whole season, the way my friend group describes it, because this is what I wrote in the script that I didn't use, which, again, I will put on another post, is unlikable bitch bending, where the entire season, she just... does nothing but make bad decisions that no human would ever make. Like, season one, it's like, all right, you're kind of an annoying, dumb, hot-headed teenager, but, like, you're a human. Season two, it's just like, Korra is making choices no one would make. Ever. And the only reason she is doing that is because the writers need to move things along in the direction they need to make the story happen. Which is very obvious and very frustrating to watch. So, for example, her dad, who is, like, a nice dude, and I don't remember why she's, like, uncool with him. Like, maybe because he sent her to live with the White Lotus people or something. It's... God, I watched this, like, last year. No, I guess it was 2 years ago now. I watched it, like, a year and a half ago. And I legit don't remember why she hates him, but she is so mad at her dad for nothing. Let's assume it was for sending her away to this essentially Avatar boarding school, which if they never taught her the concept of money or the economy, then yeah, honestly, probably a bad call. But her dad is very nice and straightforward, and there's this like both water tribes meet, which they don't normally do, and there's this super obvious like disdain between the tribes. And Korra Dad is trying very hard to be like, hey guys, we're all brothers here. Let's not fight. Meanwhile, it's very obvious that her uncle is like manipulating things behind the scenes to like fake riots and stuff so that he can seize power and be the undisputed king of both water tribes, like very Scar from the Lion King flavor. And like, maybe out of rebellion for her dad, Korra keeps making these crazy ass decisions where her dad will be like, hey, Korra, can we have dinner together? And her uncle will be like, why have dinner when you can learn to use your Sith powers to keep people alive forever? And her dad's like, I don't know, Korra, maybe we should hang out. And Korra's like, I hate you, Dad. I'm going to talk to Uncle Darth Sidious because he's super trustworthy. And then Tenzin's like, hey, Korra, I don't know if Uncle Darth Sidious is that cool. And she's like, I hate you, Tenzin. You're always trying to control me. And then Mako, her boyfriend, is like, hey, Korra, I think maybe you should listen to any reasonable authority figure in your life. Like, I don't control you or anything. I'm just your boyfriend. But like, that's my advice. And she's like, I hate you, Mako. We're breaking up. And it's like, what is going on? What is happening? And she would like, God, she's just the worst. I really can't stress that enough. She is like unwatchably the worst. And everything she does is stupid and bad. And then halfway through the season, she gets in an Avatar coma. So what else happens? Bolin makes friends with this guy named Varric, who is voiced by John Michael Higgins, and I love his voice, and I like his vocal performances. And Varric is the only good part of this season. He's very silly. He is the Tarlok of this season. He is, like, a secondary villain in the background, but, like, kind of in a silly way that's pretty forgivable. Like, he's, like, basically warmongering to sell weapons, which isn't that forgivable, but, like, I mean, the other bad guy is trying to open up a hell mouth for no reason. So, oh God, yeah, and Uncle Claude Frollo has these two kids who are like supposed to be his henchmen, and it's just like Aubrey Plaza and male Aubrey Plaza, and they're just like, we do not have personalities, that is our personality. It is funny if we are abusive to Bolin because we have a crush on him, and it's like just uncomfy, like it's not even funny to watch, it's just like, oh, these characters are bad, and like even the writers know they're bad because they don't bring them back after this season. And, like, the best part of the first half of the season, other than Varric, who is great, is that, like, Mako and I think Asami end up going on these, like, sting operations. Maybe it's Mako and Bolin, but they start making Mako, like, a police investigator, and that's pretty cool. Like, he's a detective, and I like that. That's a good angle.
Because it's using the cool 1930s film noir setting that they are choosing to ignore for no reason.
So somehow Mako is the best part of Team Avatar that season. I don't remember where Asami is. I think she just shows up once or twice and Korra's like, is it weird that I kissed your boyfriend? And she's like, what? And she's like, oh no, I knew you'd be mad at me. And she's like, I guess it's cool, whatever. And that's pretty much it. Then halfway through the season, we get this double part Spirited Away style flashback with Avatar Wan, who is the first Avatar. Everyone loves these episodes. They're not actually that good. I remember, and like, I loved them too when they came out. I liked this season the first time it came out. And then I rewatched and I was like, literally, how did I enjoy this? It's so bad. Avatar Wan's episodes are like, not actually great. I'll go into, like, they're fine. I'll go into why they're not great a little later, because I want to kind of go over something in relation to Avatar that is a problem throughout all of season two. And then essentially the final conflict is that Claude Frollo tricks his kids and maybe even Korra again into going to like the North Pole on the solstice or something so he can open up a door to the spirit world and like fuse with this ancient dark spirit that is the evil half of the Avatar. And he can be all powerful. And everyone's just like, okay, this is a little awkward, but I guess we'll help you. It's so dumb. So, among a million other things, season two's big issue, one of them, other than everything about it being terrible, season two is probably the worst offender of the, hey, remember when we made Avatar? Guys, I know Korra's kind of awkward, but remember, you like Avatar, and we made Avatar. And it's so bald-faced about it. Like, it opens up with this Avatar festival, and there's little plush dolls everywhere of all the main characters, and they're in their child forms, so you, the audience, can recognize them. And there's all these stupid nods to different, like, remember the cabbage guy? That, like, that was a funny joke. Remember this? Remember that? It's like, yeah, dude, I remember when you made a good show. Make another one or get out of my fucking face. And, like, they bring back Iroh, who is, like, the everyone's favorite character, Uncle Iroh from the first show, and he's in the spirit world, and he guides Korra. And so no one seems to be as pissed about this as me, but I, like, Avatar has a pretty set what the spirit world is in Avatar. It's this weird, creepy other world full of, like, mostly animalistic, but, like, pretty fucking monstrous creatures, and it's easy to get trapped there, and it's very scary. And then in Korra, the spirit world becomes this, like, weird, cutesy, Spirited Away Studio Ghibli world where all the creatures, like, talk and they have cute voices and Uncle Iroh's there having a tea party with them. And it's like, this is not the same spirit world. And then they're like, remember how in our lore the dragons taught people firebending and the mole rat, what were they, like, mole bears or something, taught people earthbending? And, like, there were, like, in-universe reasons for why people knew bending. Ignore all of that. Actually, the truth is people used to live on these giant lion turtle islands, and they would just lend out bending to people. So we're just going to retcon our own cooler lore and show this new spirit world that's just like, ooh, woogity boogity, you can talk to pleasant spirits. And like, the Avatar is actually a fusion of this spirit named Rava, and she allows Juan to hold all of the bending, and he's the first Avatar, and they got fused, and now they are fused forever in all their lifespans, and that's why the Avatar is there. And, like, that itself is fine, but I hate the lion turtle shit. It really feels like it's flying in the face of the pre-established lore. Especially because literally dragons teach Aang and Zuko firebending together. So, like, it's not like that lore before was bullshit. Did everyone just forget that they used to be in the same world as spirits? Because that doesn't make any sense. And at the end of it, Juan separates all the spirits and the humans because they couldn't make nice with each other. And then he's just like, I'm gonna seal Vatu, the evil guy, evil avatar spirit, in this tree forever until the planets are aligned. And, like, it just completely feels like a different show from Avatar. It's so dumb. And essentially what happens is, also Tenzin's family, who, kind of interesting on paper, I find them kind of annoying to rewatch, but I remember liking them, so I think, like, for one watch they're fine. I think that they, it's so stupid. So the whole time, Jinora, who is the sort of Jesus-y one of Tenzin's kids, Aang's granddaughter, is trying to become an airbender. And she essentially learns how to astral project, which is like a high-level airbending art. And she uses that to have light Jesus powers. And then Korra fails to stop Unalaq, Claude Frollo, from fusing with evil Vatu spirit. And he turns into a giant evil spirit named Unavatu, the giant kaiju-sized dark avatar. So Korra becomes giant somehow, and they have a giant DBZ laser fight in the bay like it's a Godzilla movie. And you just have to, like, kind of step back and look at what's happening and be like, remember when I was watching Avatar The Last Airbender and this show didn't suck major asshole? Like, oh, it's so bad. And then at the end, Jinora just walks up and uses her Jesus light and defeats Unavatu forever. And this, by doing this, like, at the end of the show, Korra, like, I'm trying to remember what happens at the end of what season. Korra reunites the spirit world, I think. Or, thinking. At the end of one of the seasons, either two or three, she reunites the spirits and human worlds, which Not a good idea. I don't know why she does that. It feels very weird. Because it's like, I'm supposed to bring harmony, and I think Juan made the wrong call, and she undoes it. And then that causes problems in at least season 4, maybe season 3 as well. Again, don't remember. Yes, she does that at the end of season 2. And I think also loses her ability to talk to old avatars, which they then retcon very quickly. And she's like, no, it's fine. She can talk to the other avatars. Maybe that's the end of season 1 where she loses. Like, see, I can't remember because all these big status quo changes happen and then they just undo the consequences of them. So it's like, I don't know, who cares? But yeah, she reunites the spirits, which causes random people to gain airbending powers, which I think is a bit of a cheat, but whatever, fine, there's airbenders again. And that's season 2. And also, they're in, like, in the most, the moment of the most, like, remember Avatar, the show you liked that wasn't bad? The biggest moment of that is there's this, like, memory fog thing that Tenzin's family is lost in, and Tenzin has to save them, because he's got this family arc going on. And as he's walking through, he bumps into Admiral Zhao, who's like the villain of the first book of Avatar, The Last Airbender. Nobody's favorite character, and he was eaten by a spirit. But he's just going, I am Admiral Zhao! I killed the moon! And over again, just as an example of like, look what happens when your memories are lost. And it's like, but it's such a clear, like, remember Admiral Zhao? And they do it with the fucking owl library, too, where it's like, remember that cool spirit library owned by an owl? Well, here we are again. This might be season 3. But that guy who lived there died, and now this guy hates humans. And it's violent. And, like, I don't know. It's just like, remember the thing you liked? 30 exclamation points. And it's just so lazy and so bad. It's like the hallmark of a shitty sequel. Anyway, that's a lot of negative. So season 3 of Korra is actually pretty cool. There's this offshoot of the White Lotus called the Red Lotus, and they're basically just crazy anarchist people. But like, they kind of have a point, though, and they're very anti-monarchy. Which is good, because all the politicians we've met this season are crazy and evil. So, this guy who is just like a cool monk gains airbending powers and uses it to break his prison. And, like, they tried to kill the Avatar at one point when it was Aang. So he breaks out and he breaks his friend out, his three friends out. And there's essentially this, like, group of evil Avatar, like, evil team Avatar. And it's like a lava bender and this lady who uses fire lasers and this woman with no arms. So she has like Dr. Octopus water tentacles where her arms should be. And that group of bad guys is rad. The best scene in the show is Bolin or Mako have either been captured by them or they have captured some of those guys. And they're just chilling in the backseat of a truck, just having a conversation between the good guys and bad guys. And it's just great. It's a really good conversation. It's the best scene because it humanizes everybody. That season is pretty good. Like, straight up, I would say season 3 of Korra is, like, maybe approaching the level of quality of, like, book 1 of Avatar. And book 1 is the worst book of Avatar, but it's still good. So season 3 is pretty good. See, it's not all negative. I'm not anti-Korra for no reason. The ending is still a little wishy-washy. It gives it like explores this metal city. There's some other cool things where people are used, like there's a guy who's like a human lie detector, and he uses his earthbending to sense palpitations in people's hearts, so he can like hear when people are lying because their heartbeat speeds up. That's a really cool application of bending that we've never seen before. He's got a cool design. They're in this city. Oh yeah, there's this big plot with Toph's descendants fighting each other. That's like a little frustrating to watch, but still kind of like, all right, you know. What else is going on in season 3? Oh yeah, the core plot is that now that there's a bunch of airbenders who just got their powers suddenly, Tenzin's trying to go around and teach them and like recruit them. And that's a little painful to watch because it's like, not everybody wants to live this way, Tenzin, even if they want to master their airbending powers. So that's a little awkward. But, like, it's mostly a good season. It's a cool conceit for a season where there's just like this independent group of people walking around attacking monarchs. They kill the Earth Queen in like they rip the air out of her lungs and asphyxiate her to death, which is like pretty neat. It's like the bloodbending equivalent for airbending. The bad guys are cool. They're people. Their motivation's a little stupid, but like, hey man, I'm down for anarchy. Like, whatever. And the endgame is kind of dumb. Like, it has some cool fights, but most of them end on kind of a whimper. Like, the fact that the lava bender loses to Bolin is, like, literally fucking unbelievable. and then, like, Zaheer, who is the main bad guy, he's, like, an airbender. His girlfriend gets bodied, and he's just like, now I have no earthly connections. And then he can just fly around like a Dragon Ball Z character. And he almost kills Korra. And I believe he, like, kills Korra's connection to her past avatar selves, or like removes her ability to bend or something. And at the end of the season, she almost dies. She's got metal poisoning from mercury and she is in a wheelchair, and they actually have her have to recover from that for months. And that's cool. Season 3 is the only good season. Again, it's not like a 10 out of 10. It's nowhere as good as like book 2 or 3 of Avatar are, but it's good. And again, here, the best example of how they never let Asami do anything. All of the main characters get to fight one of these 4 big bad guys. And remember, Team Avatar is 4 people, and the bad guys are 4 people. So here's how it shakes out. Korra fights the main airbender monk guy. Mako fights the waterbender girl and beats her with lightning. Bolin somehow beats the lava bending guy and learns to lava bend. And then Asami doesn't get a fight at all, and she just fights random Steve Bloom. It's just a random guard voiced by Steve Bloom. That's her final boss. Drives me up a fucking wall. She doesn't get to do anything. And then what? Actually, she does have one really cool scene that season where she's like in a motorcycle fight against some bandits, where it's her and Korra fighting the bandits. And she's just so cool. I'm just so pissed that, like, at the very end of this, you'll understand why I'm especially pissed about how good Asami is and how bad Korra is. So then the 4th season is a good concept. It's after the Earth Queen is killed, the Earth Kingdom is shattered into different city-states, and she was, like, a shitty queen. So this woman, Kuvira, who I'm going to call Metal Hitler, Metal Hitler is going around and picking up people and, like, essentially making this big, like, reassembling the Earth Empire under this, like, collective of, like, hey, we're metalbenders. We're very, very strong and very organized. We can get you things you need. We can get you supplies. We can build a rail station in your town. And people are like, no, you're evil. And they're like, oh, that sure would be a shame if some bandits attacked you. And then bandits will attack them and be like, do you want our protection now? Or should we beat up your town a little more? And Bolin's working for them, and that's a little stupid of him. Oh, but Varric's back, and Varric's working for them, so that's nice. Varric's great. Not as good here as he was in season 2, but maybe he is as good. It's just that season 4 is less egregiously terrible than season 2. Anyway, so spirits are now everywhere, and they're, like, taking over cities and shit, and it's a huge problem, and that's what Korra is dealing with, except she's totally failing it, because Korra is recovering from her I have no legs and I must scream, and maybe she's not a bender anymore. So she, like, sneaks away from her recovery area because she's Korra and she's too impatient for physical therapy. And, like, maybe for that one I shouldn't shit on her, because it's very, waiting on physical therapy for months and months is very mentally taxing. But, like, Korra can't do it. She breaks out and tries to, like, fight in underground fighting rings and gets her ass kicked. And eventually she runs into Toph. Okay, that's another thing. So, at the very start of the first season, Korra, what's her name? Katara, who is one of the party members in the first season, is just like, Aang, my brother and my friends are all gone now. I'm the last one. Like, very much implying she outlived all of her friends. But as the series goes on,
they're like, well, people like the old Avatar characters, so she didn't, the only ones she explicitly mentioned are dead, are Aang and Zuko, so like, or Aang and Sokka, so let's bring Zuko back, and they bring Zuko back, and let's bring Toph back, and season four is the Toph season, and it's like, remember Toph? You guys loved Toph, and it's like, yeah, man, I remember Toph, like, it's cool to see her, but like, you know what would be great, is like, make new characters who I like, and then I will just be happy. You don't need to be like, remember? And like, all of the characters, like, you know, I'm a metal person, and I was like, Toph is my mom or whatever. Like, it's all like that. It's like, we get it. It's like all legacy. It's like, just, it relies too heavily on its predecessor and doesn't bring enough to the table besides its setting, which it kind of wastes. So, the big problem to me, from my memory, in season four, is that season four is mostly good in the first... Season four is the only one I've only seen once. I've seen seasons one and two, like, three or four times. I've seen season three at least twice, and I've seen season four, I think, only one time. And that, it's been since when it aired, so... season four starts good. It shows that the airbender core that Tenzin raised in season three, there's a time skip. It's become like this crime fighting, like basically like a Doctors Without Borders thing. And that's really cool. I love that. That's a great use of these new airbenders. That's really good. Varric being back is good. I like Kuvira on paper. She ruins herself pretty hard for me because she's just so like, she's like, the ends justify the means, but like to an extent where I never believe that she could be this like super genius strategist who's uniting this massive like Russia sized kingdom, because like, fuck, man. She's just like, yes, it's very important that I am Kuvira and unite all of these kingdoms, and thinking. There's this part at the end where it, like, there's this magic spirit kush. It's like, I don't remember if it's like purple or green or whatever, but if you take the spirit stuff and squidge it into goo, you can make like atom bomb lasers. And it's like, oh, this is a super weapon, and this is what Varric's making for us. And that's bad, obviously. And Kuvira is like using it to take over Republic City. And she, one thing leads to another, and the finale is that she's ripped all the platinum off of this metalbender city and made a giant robot with it that she pilots. And platinum, the way metalbending works is you bend the unprocessed earthen ore inside of shitty metal, but platinum can't be metalbended because it's too pure. So there's this big robot, and she's just like, I have this invincible robot. You now belong to me, Republic City. And everyone's like, oh no, Republic City. And they're like, God, is there any way? We can't bend the robot. And then I remember watching this with friends and going like, can't you just like earthbend the shit around the robot? Can't you prevent it from moving? Like, earthbend the street, or we're on the shoreline, can't you waterbend it and freeze the insides of it? And they're like, it's an invincible robot. And then they're like freaking out, and someone goes, wait a minute, let's bend at it. And they just do, because like, you can't, it's just a big stupid robot. So they like lava bend at it, and she's like, oh right, lava, it destroys the robot. And Kuvira's like, I still have the big Kush laser, and I'll blow things up. Ah! And, okay. And, she has this husband who's, like, Todd Habercorn, and he's like, they, like, kidnap him as a way to be like, don't shoot, we have Todd Habercorn. And she essentially has this moment that, like, makes her stupid and irredeemable as a villain. And it's just the moment where I was like, ah, okay, bad writers are back in full swing. Where she's just like, I will kill my husband for my own empire or whatever. It's like, why? You still have the robot, whatever. So she fires the laser and he's like, I can't believe my wife was going to kill me, Todd Habercorn. And everyone is sad. And then they beat the shit out of Kuvira. And then she and Korra have this fight, and Kuvira's like,
you and I aren't... okay, again, it's been a really long time since I've watched it. But I remember one of the complaints being that Kuvira acted like she and Korra were, like, nemeses or something. And it's like, you don't understand, Korra. I'm doing the right thing. Or, like, I'm doing just what you're doing. I'm uniting the nations. And... but, like, it's treated like they've been antagonists the whole arc and they've met, like, four times. But I think they bumped into each other once and then had this final confrontation that was stupid and a massive step down from Zaheer the previous season. They kind of do the same thing in Voltron. And it's just like, okay. And Korra's like, I don't really know you. And they win somehow. And then that's it. That's the end. And then the ending is... Julie and Varric have a wedding. Julie is Varric's put-upon assistant, and it's kind of cute because I like Varric. And then, so it's 2020. I'm allowed to have a hot take on this scene. So at the very end, again, this is like 2013 when this comes out. Korra and Asami, who to their credit have had the best dynamic out of any pair of the main team Avatar characters. I believe they could have a relationship with each other. They look at each other longingly and hold hands and basically go for a date honeymoon in the spirit world. And that is the closest. And like, I remember it was a big fucking deal. They ended their show with like a, hey, these two are a couple and they're the same gender. Which was a big deal in U.S. animated cartoons when it came out. And I remember I was super psyched for it, mostly because in season two, after Korra was being the worst, I was like, well, okay, she struck out with Bolin and she struck out with Mako. So now the only one left is Asami. And I started doing that as a joke. And then the show actually kind of went in that direction. So it kind of went from like an in-joke with me and my friends to like a thing we actually shipped non-ironically. So that was a victory. But... and I'm glad they did that. And they elaborated on it more in the comics. But. And I haven't read the comics. But. I think Legend of Korra gets a lot of positive reception. And people remember it very fondly. Specifically because of that ending. Especially people on Tumblr. Especially LGBT people. And I'm allowed to critique this because I'm bi. And Korra and Asami are bi or pan. They're not lesbians. That pisses me right the fuck off. Both of them willingly date guys and enjoy it in the show. So they are bi or pan. Stop calling them gay. I don't want to call bi erasure, but yeah. No, you know what? I get to. Let me wave around my tiny little I'm LGBT flag. Bi erasure. Fuck you. So they're bi, and people are like, it's so great to have representation, and people love Korrasami as a ship. It's like the thing from that show. There's just swaths of fan art in support of it. It got a lot of positive attention because that's what people took away from the ending. And it makes sense, because it was really culturally noteworthy at the time. And I'm glad they did it. It was a major step leading to shit like... Marceline and Princess Bubblegum, and then now like She-Ra, where you are just allowed to be gay. But like it would have taken longer if Korra hadn't taken that first step. But people disproportionately remember that from the ending, and because of that, they remember the whole show, and especially season four. No one remembers fucking anything from season four except that last 10 seconds. People don't even remember that it's Varric's wedding they do that at. Like, it's not... they don't even kiss! They don't even kiss on screen! It's literally just hand-holding and a meaningful look, and then they walk into the light. And people remember it with, frankly, too much fondness because of that scene. And that's a difficult thing to criticize, even now. Like, oh my god, I would have been crucified for that even, like, 3 years ago. Hang on. Drop my carrot, and I want it. So... it pisses me off because it's not a good show. And the other thing is, Korra was a bad character the whole show. I never like her. There are times in season 3 and 4 where I'm like, I get where you're coming from. I hate you, but like, I wouldn't call this badly written. It's not fun to watch, but it's badly written. Whereas like in season 2, she is just badly written and not fun to watch. And Asami, who is the best character and is fun to watch, A, could do so much better than Korra. Like, Korra is just a piece of shit. And I frankly hate that they're together. Because it feels kind of like, well, you're the last option, so here you go. But here's the thing. it's great that Asami gets to be in a relationship at the end. But if you want to wave your big LGBT flag and act like it's a huge victory even today, like, yay, we have a gay couple at the end, then you better put Asami in the fucking show, all right? Like, she gets a little arc with her dad in season 4, and it's, like, so forgettable that, like, because her dad's a bad guy working for Amon in the first season, and then she has no more focus. And then in season 4, it's like, Asami, I'm sorry that I was evil. I'm going to commit suicide. Bye. And she's just like, Dad. And that's it. And it's like, that wasn't satisfying. That was kind of just sad and awkward, to be honest. And, like, I think he, like, dies in order to weaken the robot they were already defeating. Oh, and the other thing is, for that final fight, they have Toph, who is, like, a goddamn... She's just a god. You can't beat Toph in a battle. Like, she could bend the earth to open asunder and send you into the magma of the mantle and then close it back up. But she literally, someone's just like, Toph, are you gonna help? And she's like, nah, it's time for the new generation to do some shit. And it's like, Toph, the city is being destroyed by a stupid giant robot. Eh! The writers want these characters to take it. And it's like, look, motherfucker, if you're gonna pander and bring Toph back this late in the game because you're running out of actual ideas on how to make things interesting, then how dare you just have her be like, I'm here, but I'm not gonna help. And it's not like she's too old. Like, she was fighting earlier in the episode. Whatever, 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 I hate it. Yeah, I just, people like Korra and Asami, and I think they like them because for a long time, Korra Asami was the only mainstream women love women option in 2D animated media. If you are telling, imagine right now, and like, not to take that away from anyone who that was a big deal for you back then, because it was a big deal for me too. I didn't even know I was bi, but I was like, hell yeah, this is great. And I can't say it's a bad thing for that to have been a big moment for you, because it wasn't. It's great. But if you are recommending Legend of Korra to someone in 2020 who is just now living in 2020, where it's like pretty fucking okay to be LGBT in the mainstream, like trans is the one that's still a little tricky and we're working on that, but like, you can get away with women kissing other girls so easily now. It's almost a decade later. If you are telling somebody that, who has just finished Avatar, that, hey, did you like Avatar? Legend of Korra is great. They are not going to feel the same thing you did at that ending. And they are going to have to go through a shit stain of a show to get to that. So what might have been a really big climax for you in 2013 or whenever it came out is not, it's going to be a whimper for anyone in 2020, because it's like, oh, they hold hands? That's it? That's the end? Okay. Because it's nothing now. I don't know. I have a lot of opinions on Korra, and if I had just watched the show, I could literally write like a huge essay. I could do a big video thing on it. I feel bad anytime I'm just like, well, the show is bad. Bolin is bad. Cause it's really hard for me to remember like, okay, here's a joke that lands flatly. Here's where Bolin does nothing. Here's where Bolin is useless. This is annoying. They could have written a better comedic character for this. Like, it's very hard to think of all the moments that are annoying because they don't stick out in my head unless they're like egregiously bad. And I just like, Bolin's never the worst. He's just obnoxious because he's not funny. Ugh. Anyway, that's a very long thing. I will record the couple jokes I had for that unpolished Korra video. And I will put that in another post. Hopefully this was interesting, but, like, please, like, if you want to watch Korra, then, like, fine. But, like, do, and it's okay if you like it. It's fine if you like it. Do not tell people it is as good as Avatar. They are not even in the same ballpark. Like, Avatar is an A or an S rank show. And if I am being generous, Korra is a C. Okay, I got nothing else to say. Bye.